Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
Katie Pills,
and Ryan Pills in the house.
Today we are joined yet again by all of our friends who are in faraway places. We are hanging out together socially, digitally, virtually, spiritually, all the lees. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us from afar. This evening we did get to play some games together, even though we were cooped up in our own houses. Who wants to talk about Blank Slate?
I will. So we got together online and played Blank Slate on our YouTube channel and had a very fun time. We had all of us here, Ryan, Katie, Kevin, Melissa, Jonah, Chantel, Will, and I. And it went pretty well, except for the audio issues. The game itself was a lot of fun.
The good news is we figured out that you can actually go live unlisted, and we can figure out all the issues and then go live, because we did it by accident.
Right. We did that by accident. We had one entire take. Yeah. We'll see if that works, though. What does that look like on the recording? We'll have to watch that and see. Is there 10 minutes of us echoing and being goofy? Guess we'll find out.
I know. We'll have to find out.
Yep, that was fun. We've done a couple other lives recently, too, which has been a lot of fun. I do have to admit that while I've been trapped at home, I've been very glad to have the technologies that we do. We got to play some Renegade games earlier this week on our channel, but sponsored in part by, or I don't know, encouraged by Renegade Game Studios. We played, not Architects, which one did we play?
We played Raiders.
Raiders of the North Sea from Garpil and from Renegade. And we did a cool little... live events happened while we were playing, which was kind of neat.
It was super fun. So to make it feel like, even though it's not a game that you can really play long distance easily with a lot of players, we did play live and interacted a little bit with the audience, but then also those people who were playing at home, and you can go back and watch the video and play on your own time. Every 10 minutes in the game, we would have a timer go off and a worldwide event would happen, and it would be something like every player has to lose a crew member, or every player gains a certain number of provisions. If they, you know, lose something else, you can trade in silver for provisions. There was all kinds of events that happened throughout the game. Some of them were obvious. They were very good things to happen. And other ones, it was kind of a difficult choice. Do I mess up what I was going to do because this new thing happened and it's worth points at the end of the game? It was a lot of fun. It was a good twist to just playing the base game.
Yeah, and it wasn't just a timer. The Renegade Game Studios was actually publishing them on their Twitter page, so anybody that was playing at the time would have the same effects on their game, which was pretty neat. So you obviously wouldn't have those if you went back and played it, but you could start playing the game at the same time as we did, and then as the alarms go off notifying you, you'd be able to, you know, make those decisions, which was cool. It was very neat. I think Katie also did some live stuff this week, past week, 2 weeks ago in podcast time.
I did some, some online gaming, did some Roll20, some stuff on Board Game Arena. Ryan and I have played a couple of games here, just the two of us.
Did you play Tiny Towns with AEG, Katie?
Oh, yeah. I've been playing Tiny Towns like every day.
Yeah. Katie introduced me to the expansion. I believe it's called Fortunes. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ryan wins every time, though. Yeah. I haven't won against Ryan. I'm bad at it. I like it so much, but I'm so bad. I keep I keep the like, Ryan, let's play together. And he's like, okay. And then he,
I'll crush you.
And then he wins every time.
I can sympathize with you. I actually enjoy it and I feel like I play it very well. And then Sarah still beats me by like at least 2 points every single game.
I know. Well, I always find out, I always trap myself in some sort of corner or another where I'm like, I didn't plan this well. Like, even in my mind, I'm getting those out of the way, but in actuality, I'm building buildings right where I need to still use building space. So
even when I had the tower that allowed me to like put my pieces wherever I wanted to when I made them, I don't remember what that one's called, but I did great at that. And then at the end of the game, I still realized like, oh, I didn't actually get any points. I just filled up my board.
Oh,
yeah. We had a really cool, I had a really cool tower where if I had two formations that overlapped, I could build both buildings using the same resources.
Which seemed totally unfair to me.
So we had the schoolhouse and what's the base one? The cottage?
Yeah.
Those kind of overlap a little bit. So you just need one more resource to get this nice synergy going. So that was why I beat her so bad.
Yeah. It was...
It's a good excuse.
Yeah.
But we have also snuck in another round of Cowboy Bebop. We enjoy that.
Yeah.
And we come back to Planet Unknown and tried the corporation asymmetrical play, and that was a lot of fun.
That's the one that's on Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's on Kickstarter right now. It's got the
Adam's Apple Games.
Yes.
Tile drafting.
Yeah. Ryan also beats me on that one. That's another one where you're trying to like manage how well you place things down. And he's also beating that one.
Something I'm excited about, but didn't get a chance to play yet. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. I was able to swing by Boardwalk today and pick up the expansion to Call to Adventure, the Name of the Wind expansion. I'm pretty excited. I'm looking forward to playing that. And, go support your own local game store because they need it right now. Ours is going to have to close because of the dictates.
Quarantine.
So they're going to be hard-pressed. So if you can find a way to support your local game store, support those FLGSs.
Yeah, especially when they reopen.
Cool? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Or now. Weren't you saying they were going to, like, allow you to order online and something like that?
Ours right now is letting us do that, but I don't know once they close. I think they're taking a hiatus.
Yeah, they said they're going to have to close down at 5 p.m. tomorrow.
Yeah.
Get your orders in tomorrow.
Which will be last week, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So
get my orders in tomorrow.
Yeah. So Melissa and I were able to play some games recently. One of them is a game that's coming out soon from Rio Grande Games called Musical Chairs. This is a game for 2 to 4 players. Takes about, I think the lower player count's probably a little quicker, 30 minutes, maybe with a higher player count. I'm assuming I haven't played with higher player count, probably a little bit closer to an hour. Basically think about the game board is a circular board with a bunch of chairs that are illustrated on the board. And there are tokens that are the seat cushions that go on, I think it's like 10 or 12 chairs around the circle. And you have your player pawns that are sort of next to all these chairs. And you are basically playing cards from your hand. And when you play a card, you can move 1, 2, or 3 spots. Doesn't matter the number of the card. I think the cards go from like 1 to 9 value. But when you play a card, you're moving 1, 2, or 3. Basically, what you're trying to do is collect cards into your own personal
score pile.
Score pile. Every card has a different number of treble clefs on them, like either 0, 1, 2, or 3 treble clefs. And Melissa, maybe you can explain.
The treble clefs are points.
Yeah, so those are points. And Melissa can explain how you actually gain those points.
Well, basically, on your turn, you have to play a card. There are those numbered cards. There's a rest card.
Oh, yeah, and there's a repeat card.
Or a repeat card. And the first player plays the lowest card in their hand. And then the next player either can play the same value, can play
a higher value, but
A higher value, but it has to be
the lowest of their highs. But it has to be, but yeah.
Lowest of their highs.
So if they don't play the same value, which they don't have to, they could play a higher one, but it has to be the lowest of their of higher than what's already out.
Correct. And then eventually it'll get to a point where you can't play any more cards, or if you don't have any cards that are higher than the current one out, you can stop.
And you, yeah, you stop the music.
And then whichever seat you're by, say I'm next to the red seat, I get to take all the red cards that are out in the play area that have been played that round. And hopefully they're points. Mm-hmm. And then there's things with the cushions. At certain times you can buy the power of that cushion, and then that gives you more benefit.
Yeah, I think Melissa had like a cushion that let her move backwards a space. I had one that let me get more points for certain cards I was getting, like certain rest cards and things like that. So all the cushions are basically different powers. Every game's going to be a little different because there's like, I don't know, there's probably like 30, well, maybe 25 different seat cushions that you randomly are putting out, and you're only using like 10 of them. So it's kind of mind-boggling to think about. Like, it's kind of hard over podcast to like understand what's going on. And we actually, reading the rules, were like, I'm not really sure what's going on. It took me a couple of rounds to be like, oh, I'm getting cards this way, or I'm able to play cards this way. Oh, if I am able to get on the same seat as Melissa, then you do a butt battle.
Because only one person can have the seat.
Right.
So yeah, it's definitely a whimsical game. It's an interesting theme, musical chairs. You don't think about that, but it's a pretty cool card battling game. Melissa killed me. I just was not able to get the right cards. Let me just say, repeat cards are like the most powerful cards in the deck. And Melissa had a ton of them throughout the game.
I actually discarded like 12 of them. Also, there are so many. It was much more thinky than I thought it was going to be, because it's all these bright colors and chairs and you're like, oh, musical chairs. But you really have to time your cards, because if you play a numbered card, you have to move one, two or three spaces. So you're thinking, I really want to get to the red chair. If I move too much in the beginning, I'm going to overshoot it. But if I don't move fast enough, Kevin might
stop the music
before I get there. So there was a bit of like tension.
There was one round where I think four or five orange cards were out and we were both trying to get it, but the music stopped before either of us could get to the orange or something like that. It was crazy. Anyway, I'm really interested in playing this game with a higher player count someday. I don't know if it's possible to play it over online. Probably not, since it's card based. Mm-hmm. But musical chairs from Rio Grande coming out soon. Melissa and I were able.
So pretty cool.
Go.
About halfway through you explaining that, I was thinking, I know I've seen this before. What in the world? This sounds so familiar. I doubt that you guys have seen it. Have you seen the Board Game Designer's documentary?
No.
Guessing that's a no. So I think Eric Rail is the guy who's behind it. I don't know how this came across my radar, but Sarah and I just watched the board game documentary, like just, I don't know, a couple nights ago. Mm-hmm. And this woman game designer and her husband were traveling around to all these places. They went to Germany. She was like learning to speak German so that she could pitch games to German publishers. And she has this game called Musical Chairs.
Really?
Her prototype looks like garbage.
Well, no, her prototype doesn't look.
It looked rough. It looked real rough. It was like cut out pieces of paper, which is okay. It's understandable. Weird looking chairs, like clef notes all over the place. The camera didn't show like anybody playing it, didn't give you any idea of how in-depth or, you know, apparently heavy it is. It looked like a kid's game that she was playing when she was showing it off. And then like one of the high notes at the end of the movie is when she says, it's a low note first, because she says, oh, I got rejected by these other three games that I was really excited about, but one of my games got picked up. And so I was like, oh, cool. I wonder if we're ever going to see this. And now it sounds like you guys played it. It sounds interesting. Bravo to music documentary board game maker guy.
Yeah. Melissa and I were also able to play another exit game called Catacombs of Horror, a 4.5 out of 5 difficulty.
Yes.
So how many more of these things are there left? I thought you guys had played them all.
Oh, no, we have more. But this one was definitely different than the other ones we have been playing recently that were the level one-ish, level two difficulty. And this one's actually a two-part exit game. It comes in a much bigger box.
Yeah, double the size. At least double the size.
And so you play through the first part, and then it tells you, yay, you won the first part, and now you're going on to the second part.
So you could literally just keep playing, but we did it over two nights, so.
But yeah, it was more difficult.
I would say, though, I have played a 4 out of 5 before, and I would say this one was not 4.5 out of 5. I would say this was either on par with the 4 out of 5 or maybe like even like a 3.75, 3.5 out of 5. Personally, there were a couple things that we definitely needed hints on. So I would definitely say it's hard, but there were a couple things if we were observant enough on multiple puzzles, we would have not needed the hints because we were just like, oh, I'll just give a hint. But yeah, it's, I would highly recommend this one. Very fun. There's some interesting things that they add to the game. I'm going to spoil. There is a,
well, I think you notice that as soon as you open it,
When you open the box, there's a tea light candle that you actually light during the game. So pretty cool.
Wait, did I already play that one? I guess that's probably a trope in other games too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What was it? What was this one called?
Catacombs of Horror.
Yeah. No one else has played this one.
So I have a question. When you guys are playing and you decide to get a hint, what is it that motivates you to get the hint? Are you like, it's been 5 minutes? Is it like, we'll
I'm usually, it's been
out?
15 minutes. We're not going anywhere doing a hint.
I'm usually like, oh, no, man. Don't. We can figure this out. We can
I'm
figure
like,
this
we
out.
We could figure it out and we'll be here all night.
Oh, I'm like, I'm night, stubborn. Though, right? I would totally be with you on that, Melissa. I'd be like, we can do it. We can do
all
it.
All right, I'm going to go watch a movie, and I'll be back when you're ready.
You let me know when you get the clue figured out.
Yeah, the nice thing about the exit games is the hint structure. There's 3 cards for each puzzle. And the first one basically tells you these are the items and the cards that you need. If you don't have all this stuff, you're not ready to do the puzzle. So that's what the first
which
card
is. Which is really helpful when you get to the more difficult ones because they're like, oh, we can't even do this yet. We don't have all the stuff. Because sometimes you don't know when you're at the harder puzzles what you do and don't have. Whereas the easier puzzles, you sort of know what because of how they progress. It's like you cannot go to the next puzzle till you complete this one. So in this, the harder ones, you're working on 5 different puzzles at once.
That's cool.
Cool.
Any other games make it to the table at Ryan and Katie's house? You guys said you played some RPGs and some online stuff. What platform are you guys using to do that on?
BoardGameArena.com for the online board games and Roll20.net for the RPGs.
Have you researched and like explored all the options out there? Are those the only options? Or are those the best options? What drew you to
those?
Those
are by far not the only options. I started with the Board Game Arena because I had a friend group that was wanting to do some online stuff because we couldn't meet in person. And that is what the hosts of the game night settled on. So that's what we went with for that one. Roll20 is kind of a classic, I guess.
There's like 4 or 5 that you can do role-playing games on.
Yeah.
This is just the first one that I've been introduced to, and all the other ones I didn't care for as much.
One of the other popular ones is called Tabletop Simulator on Steam. It does cost a little bit, like $10 right now, or it's on sale. I don't know how long it's going to be on sale, but.
And that's like a one-time subscription, or that's like a month?
No, it's $10 just to download the software through Steam.
That's cool. We did some gaming this week online with some friends through just Zoom or Facebook. I don't remember which we used. Googled something. We got to play First Contact with some friends. That actually worked pretty well. I took a picture of the cipher board and like didn't look at it, but sent the picture to the friends. And they were able to play the Egyptian gods and give Sarah and I the symbols so that we could communicate with them. So that was pretty neat. And we were having such a good time that we were like, well, what else could we play? So we shelved that one and pulled out.
Just one.
Yeah, just one, and played a couple rounds of that. And it was pretty fun with 4 players. And I was like, it'd be way better with more. let's just text some people. So we got another couple on there. They joined us. And then Ryan and Katie finally joined us. Like, I don't even know. I think at like 11 o'clock. Did you guys jump on?
Yeah, it was like right around 11.
We were just going to bed and I checked my phone. I was like, well, let's get up and go play.
We have to.
Yeah, we were literally sitting down in bed and Ryan was like, you want to go play? I was like, oh, sure. What else are we going to do? Just go to sleep, I guess.
Friday night at midnight, we could party a little longer.
Yeah.
We played just one for several rounds. We kind of switched it up at the end. We actually ended up almost playing Blank Slate because we decided, let's see if we can switch it and see if we can match answers and see who gets points that way. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, the dress code was definitely casual. I think we all decided we're just not even going to worry about it. Turn your camera on low res. Doesn't matter what your hair looks like.
Yeah, we had done yard work all day and came in, I was like, I don't look that great, but I'll just put a hat on.
Yeah, I was like, pants aren't even required. As long as you got a shirt, we're good to go. Let's play some games. All right, well, I think with that, we're ready to roll into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption!
This week, we'll be talking about three games coming to Kickstarter the week of April 13th, 2020. Will, go ahead and start us off.
All right. So I'm not even actually looking at a game. I'm looking at Blacklist's Miniatures Fantasy Series, which is coming April 14th to Kickstarter. It's a big old box full of a lot of really cool looking minis. You've got all kinds of creatures from rats to dragons. You've got the warriors and the archers. You got this sick looking dude with a giant axe thing. You can definitely check out their Kickstarter Blacklist to get a feel for the types of things that you're going to be able to get with them. I can't look at the Kickstarter page yet because it hasn't launched, but I'm sure they'll have a couple different options for you to back. The artwork on the box looks like a lot of fun, although I don't think it matters because you're looking at just the minis in this case. But yeah, check that one out if you're interested in adding some minis to your collection. Fantasy Series 1 from Blacklist. Sarah's got one. Who else out there has one to talk about?
Well, we got a couple more. We actually have four games.
Four games, counted. Gotcha.
But anyway, Forest Guardians is coming to Kickstarter from the publisher Shepherd Kit Incorporated. And this is a beautiful little tile game where you are building the landscape of Taiwan. In the game, you will place tiles. Some of them are things that aren't beneficial to you. There are some forest fires or illegal logging that may happen as well. But you're trying to get tiles, and some of them have animals, and you may have an animal encounter that goes with your tile. And then you will take some ranger actions that go with certain tiles and things in the forest. So on your turns, you are doing those two things. And then once you get to the end of the game, the player who has planted all of their forest meeples out on their character boards, that ends the game. This one is, to me, looks like it may have an easier rule set. It doesn't have a weight on here, but since the description has just a few things you're doing on your turn, it maybe seems like one of those tile games where it is easy to understand at first and play, but then there's going to be a lot of strategy and thinking behind the scenes when you're playing. So that is Forest Guardians from Shepherd Kit. Kevin, what are you looking at?
Well, this game is coming from Come On. It's called Ankh, Gods of Egypt. It's one of my most anticipated war games coming out on Kickstarter this year. I mean, I'm so excited because Blood Rage was an amazing game, Rising Sun was an amazing game, and this is the third game in this trilogy from designer Eric Lang and artist Adrian Smith, and of course, published by Come On. And this game is set in Egypt. You are actually playing as a god of ancient Egypt and trying to build caravans, summon monsters, and convert followers to your quest. So I'm really excited on how this is going to play. Rising Sun was one of my favorite games a couple years ago. It's still one of my favorites. I played it at a Tantrum Con just a few months ago, and I won. And it was great. And I'm really excited about this one. I hopefully will be playing this actually on Tabletop Simulator with Eric Lang tomorrow afternoon, which is hopefully already done and passed. And I will talk about this on our channel a little bit more about the gameplay and get some more stuff out on our social media so that people can learn more about Ankh, Gods of Egypt, coming April 14th.
Wait. You said you're going to play it online with Eric Lang?
Yeah.
What?
If you win.
I'm not going to win. I'm just going to learn how to play.
Okay. Yeah. We'll have fun. We're a little jealous.
We're cheering for you.
Thanks. All right. I think I'm heading it over to Ryan or Katie.
Coming April 14th from Chip Theory Games is Cloud Spire, a reprint with two additional factions. The original game had four factions, but now they're adding a mercenaries and pirate factions to the expansion. And there's also new scenarios for both solo and cooperative play to incorporate those factions. Mm-hmm. The game itself is kind of a tower defense game with some MOBA aspects. So if you're really into those style of video games, mobile games, you should check this out because it looks like it's pretty cool. It's got some interesting world building going on, and I like that there's different play modes with cooperative and such. Yeah. I'd be interested in checking it out.
They're also upgrading a lot of the components too. So it sounds like they're going to have what they call luxury game components with like weighted chips and die cut neoprene playing surfaces and that sort of thing. So
yeah, it is a pretty weighty game. It's about 90 to 180 minutes. And from what I understand, it's up there in the weight of the game. So if you are looking for a hefty MOBA tower defense game,
something to take up all your quarantine time.
Yeah, this might be it. Check it out. Cloud Spire, coming April 14th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the artwork for it looks really cool. That city look. Is this the exact same cover as before? Do you have any idea? It looks very familiar to me.
Yeah, everything I've seen looks like it is the original art that they're using for the reprint, but there might be something out there I've missed. Kevin, who are we going to welcome to the house for our interview?
We're going to welcome to the house Eric Lang from Come On. Actually, I should say welcome back to the house since we've had you on before. So welcome.
Hey, Kevin. Glad to be back.
Yeah, so today we have you on the show to talk about Ankh, colon, Gods of Egypt.
Ankh, colon, Gods of Egypt. That's right.
Yeah. I didn't forget. I was able to play a game of this on Tabletopia a few days ago and really enjoyed it. But in your own words, Eric, tell us, what is Ankh, colon, Gods of Egypt?
Well, it's all about the colon, you see. I'm sure your listeners are pretty familiar with the, hopefully familiar with the mythic trilogy of Blood Rage and Rising Sun. This is number three. Even if you haven't played the other two, this should stand alone as it's as a big mythic fantasy ancient Egypt game with gods and monsters and warriors. It's a 2-5 player competitive game, area control, combat, devotion with a few twists. So the big twists in this one, of course, are that it is a competitive game, but there's a point in the game where two players will merge together and become one god, and they'll win or lose together based on an event that happens in history, which is a hallmark of Egyptian mythology. And the game is, rather than being based on straight up victory points like Blood Rage and Rising Sun one, this is based on a devotion track that you guys are trying to gain keep the devotion of your followers. A track which is both upwardly and downwardly mobile. You win the game if you get ultimate devotion, if you get to the end of that track, but as you gain and lose, at a late portion of the game, later on in the game's timeline, if you are quote unquote in the red still, you become irrelevant and you are, and you're gone, you're out. Don't worry, guys, you're not gone for long.
I felt that the devotion track was sort of a nod to the honor track in Rising Sun, but like the honor track's important in Rising Sun, but like the devotion track is like the main thing.
That's right. Or it, because we don't have a victory track.
Right.
That's what that is. The devotion track in this game is the victory track. But yeah, you're right, because it's upwardly and downwardly mobile. It is a little bit like honor, but ideally you're mostly going up.
Yeah. Hopefully you're going up. So when Blood Rage came out, and then with the Viking theme, and then Rising Sun with the feudal Japan theme, was it like a no-brainer that the third game was going to be Egyptian theme, or did you ruminate on other ideas?
Oh no, it was totally no-brainer. So these games are super personal to me, right? They're not. And none of these choices were random. They're all based on mythologies that I personally grew up with. So when I was young, I used to visit my grandmother in Germany in the summers, and there was not much to do. It's a very boring rural town that we went to. So we played board games, and I read these German folktales and legends books and I fell in love with these worldly mythologies. Ironically, I grew up thinking they were all German mythologies, but So they were. I was inspired over time to create a series of games that were based on my childhood interpretation of these mythologies, and I only wanted to do the ones I was really passionate about and have a really long-reaching, deep connection to, and that I could recall from heart, top of mind, I should say.
Cool. That's pretty cool that you had that sort of history that you could like sort of pull on from your past, from your childhood. That's pretty neat. Let's talk about the different gods. At least in the base game, there's five gods:
Ra,
Amun, Osiris, Anubis, and Isis. Did I get that right?
That's right.
Cool. Which ones were easier or came to you first for the gameplay?
Oh, they're all hard. I mean, this game, man, I left a big piece of myself behind in this game. The development process was arduous and crazy. That you'd think, being the third part of a series, it would be easy, but no, of course not, because it's following Rising Sun, right? So it's got big, big shoes to fill. I knew what I wanted. What I wanted was crystal clear. I wanted gods that, because you are the gods, you yourself, and you have a big miniature that represents you. I wanted them to be iconic. I wanted them to feel, I want you to feel a thematic connection without being too inside baseball. I wanted them to, all, of course, they all have to be balanced as much as they can be. I want them to be asymmetrical. And I want them to really guide the way you play without guiding the way you win, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So, with those restrictions, it's I went with my gut on the original designs, and the core design didn't change much. I designed most of them in an afternoon, but the details, I mean, they changed a million times.
Yeah, I was thinking about, as you said, the god itself, the god power, sort of like pushed in or sort of showed you what the theme of the god, like I think like Anubis with the undead sort of like helped with the gameplay. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. So like, well, Anubis is a good example, right? So Anubis is, he's the keeper of the dead, right? He's the keeper of the underworld. And so like, this is how asymmetrical I want the game to feel. When Anubis is in the game, just like in the other two games, when you lose figures, if you lose figure to in battle or to plague or something, they normally just go back to your pool. But of course, if Anubis is in the game, instead of going back to your pool, they go to Anubis. He traps them in the netherworld, and he gets stronger for every figure in the netherworld. And if you want to get them back, you have to pay him your followers, which are sort of like the currency of the game. Gods are callous creatures. He changes the scope of that game. So now you feel like, oh, Anubis is here, so this is how the netherworld works, the underworld. And when you're not, when he's not, it'll work normally.
Cool. I love the simplicity in that you only have four actions to choose from, but you can only do, you know, up to two of them. But how and when you do them, it's like, that's really like the core strategy in the game. I really like that part.
Right. Yeah. So the interesting thing is, Yeah, so the actions aren't actually linked to the strategy of the game, but they're linked to the tactics, right? The short term. So it's move, summon, gain followers, or unlock Ankh powers. That's the core of the game. Those are the things you get to do. But this game is much more, to pardon the pun here, it's much more sandboxy than than the really guided experience of Rising Sun and Blood Rage. Here, it's like boom. You're in ancient Egypt, go do what you will. And you have to use your, you have to navigate how you want to keep relevant in devotion, how you win, how you lose it, generally on your own. So you have to look at the Ankh powers that your gods have, which ones you want to unlock, how you want to react to your opponents. And a lot of that becomes about timing. Like, do I really need to summon figures now? Or am I going to set the next player up to trigger the next event in the timeline? How bad is that for me? How good is it for them? Am I going to merge with this player? Do I actually want to help them in this particular point in the game? There's a lot to consider, even though you have those actions. And those are my favorite kind of games, right? Not a lot of things, not a million things to do, a few things to do, but the considerations are very weighty.
I really like that. I will agree with you. When it came to my turn, or when it was about my turn, I was like, I would really like to do these two things, but based on what other people were doing, because you're moving the different tokens up the different action tracks, it did influence what my decision was going to be when it actually got to my turn, which I like that.
Yeah, it has to. That it's core to the game.
Mm-hmm. Speaking, you mentioned the Ankh powers. Those are the same, or at least they could be the same, or they start the same for all the players, but they are different as the game goes along because you're unlocking the Ankh powers. Can you talk a little bit more about the levels and how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. So every god has a tech tree light, I could say,
sure.
12 potential Ankh powers that you can unlock, and you will unlock up to a maximum of 6 of them. There's 4 level 1s, 4 level 2s, 4 level 3s that you have to sacrifice followers to unlock. Again, callous gods. So of the Ankh powers, they all have different focuses and both tactical and strategic, and they basically inform how do you want to gain followers? How do you want to attune yourself to monuments in the game, which is another huge part of the game. And how do you want to set up actually your devotion engine, which is the third part. They all combo in different ways. And because you can only pick 6 of them and you have to do it dynamically in play, you always have to weigh which power do I want versus which power do I want or need right now versus which are going to are synergized together to give me my ultimate thing. And rather than be totally abstract, I'd like to give you a couple of examples. The level 1 powers are mostly about how you're going to gain followers, which are kind of the currency of the game. Yeah, followers are just important. Followers are currency to gods because that's how it works. Do you want to choose? And all the Ankh powers are named after traits that a god could be. All these cool divine traits. So do you want to be bountiful, which gives you access to more followers if you are in a conflict in fertile regions, the green regions rather than the desert. Or do you want to be revered, which augments your gain followers actions, give you access to more followers when you choose to do that? Do you want to focus on winning battles? If you win battles, do you want to be glorious and actually win followers from that? So your first level of Ankh powers is based on how do I want to generate followers? Then afterward, you're going to choose which of the 3 monument types you want to attune to, or do you want to attune to battles, and so on and so forth.
Cool. Well, this is the same team with you as the designer and Adrian Smith as the illustrator. And is it the same sculptor too for the minis?
That's right, Studio McVay. It's exactly it's the same band, same producer too, Tiago Aranha. So, it literally is all the same people for the last 3 games.
Man, so I mean, I really liked Blood Rage. Rising Sun was my favorite game of 2018, looking forward to Ankh and. This game is on Kickstarter in April. Do you know how long the campaign is? Is it like a 30-day campaign or 20 days?
I don't think I'm allowed to say at this point, unfortunately. Okay. Sorry.
But we know it launches April 14th, and it was...
Yes.
So that's good. We have that information. Listeners, please check out Ankh : Gods of Egypt from Kaman on Kickstarter this April. Any other final thoughts? Before we say goodbye, Eric.
Don't forget the colon.
That's right. Don't forget the colon. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Bye.
Cool. Good stuff. One of the other fun things that we've been working on at Tantrum House is our Tantrum House Awards show, which I think it's pretty much all on my shoulders to get done at this point.
Did we get the last video in?
We have not, actually, and I won't name any name. Jeremy Howard, who hasn't turned in their last video, but those should be coming very soon. And then I just have to compile everything. So through the beauty of green screen, hopefully it'll all look like we were in one place for the filming of this video.
So Jeremy is putting together games that will go to people and families who are in need during this time. And so hopefully that will brighten their day, and even though most of us here in the U.S. are now moving towards being sheltered at home, so hopefully that will be a pleasant surprise and activity that families can spend time together doing.
It'll brighten my day if he sends me the video. No, it is pretty cool. We actually were able to jump in on that. We donated some games that we had sitting around as well. I think they went to like a school library or something, or I can't remember what it was, but that wouldn't be useful at this point. But
we had two groups. There was a school library that has a game group that meets, and so they were needing some new games for next year for when they start back up. And then there was an adult group home that has some disabled people who were needing some more activities to do in their home since they can't leave their home at this point. So we send some games to them that work really great for them.
Yeah, I don't think we sent any award winners, but we did send some really solid games to those people, so that was really great. I hope they have a great time with them. For our award show, hopefully that'll be ready. I don't know if we have a date scheduled for it or not, but it'll be a great quarantine viewing as you can sit back for a little while and watch as we present, I think, 7 or 8 categories, maybe, of games that we, last year, we put out a call for nominations for some specific categories, and we got tons of nominations, and then we kind of curated that list into categories, and we had online voting for everybody, and we tallied all that down, and then we just recently kind of teamed up with a bunch of other media makers to put together this show, so should be a lot of fun. I've got to put the starting touches on the video so that we can get it all wrapped up and produced. And I think we'll probably do like a YouTube premiere for it. So keep an eye out for that. We'll announce when it's coming and maybe we can all watch it together. So should be a lot of fun. Hopefully the final details will come together on that one. I know we got a couple of games in the mail this week, and I think a couple of them might have made it over to Ryan and Katie's house. What are some of the games that you guys might be playing next week?
Well, we'll definitely be looking at like we said earlier, the expansion to Call to Adventure, The Name of the Wind. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Name of the Wind.
The Name of the Wind.
Zona is another one we got, and there's a game set in the Legends of Andor. I don't remember the title, but I am interested in seeing what they did moving on with the same world there. We also got the Dark Judges expansion for Wildlands. Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting.
Rio Grande Games said they're going to send us a 2-player game called Robin of Loxley. So I'm excited to try that out.
Oh, perfect.
That sounds cool.
2-player.
I'm actually excited about the Legends of Andor game. I think I've only played that maybe once, the original one. The artwork for it, I loved. I had a couple of issues with, like, isn't that the one where the instructions are printed on, like, one side of your player board, and then you put all your tokens on the other side of your player board? Am I thinking of the right game, Ryan?
Maybe.
That might have been, oh, you know what that was? It wasn't that. Good job, Legends of Andor. It was Banner Saga. That was the
one. Oh, Banner Saga. To, like, okay.
Flip stuff back and forth.
I was like, I'm not sure what he's talking
Legends
about.
Too, though. So let me know how that one is. I'll be curious to hear your report back next week as we talk about games from far away.
Some other gaming that I'm looking forward to doing is on the 15th, Will and I will be playing Bargain Quest Live. You can go to Renegade Game Studios event page for that on Facebook. And I believe maybe Kevin and Melissa are playing Clank.
Yeah, we'll be playing Clank in the, I think, 22nd of April. So check that out in a couple weeks.
Cool stuff. Well, it looks like we've got our hands full of games to play. Hopefully you guys do as well. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and listening to yet another episode. Go show some love on Kickstarter. I know there's plenty of campaigns out there that could use your help. And then same with your local board game store. If you're able to place any last-minute orders, get them in now because we might be in for the long haul. We'll always be here, though, talking about games and the new stuff that we're playing. And we'll look forward to connecting with you guys online and through lots of different channels. If you have some games going on that you are excited about, let us know. You can send an email to will@tantrumhouse.com or you can connect with us on Facebook or all the other social channels. Until then, though, we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.